When she was 18, her father gave her the advice she needed to follow her dreams and become a writer. The next day, he had a heart attack and died in her arms. She did become a writer and a business owner and then a wife and mother. Today, after 13 books, a million of them in print, she's an award-winning syndicated columnist, a radio and TV host, and the owner of two successful companies. And now, Elise is here to help you rebuild your life. Stay tuned. This is gonna be good. This is the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Elise Glink Show. I'm your host, Elise Glink, and I'm here to help you make really smart choices about your financial life. One of the things that I've been talking about on Twitter is that Sam and I, my husband Sam the man, we're looking at making another investment in real estate. So we've bought condos before, and we've bought townhouses and all the rest, but now we're looking at our first commercial building. And this is a property, it's not all that huge, but it's got a very different kind of thinking about how to make these kinds of investments work. So we're looking at it, and we've looked at others before, we've never actually bought it. I don't know for sure we're going to buy this one, but I thought what I would do is give you an update from time to time about what we're doing and what we're thinking about, so that if you're out there looking at investment properties, particularly commercial properties, it'll help you think through it. So we went to see the property, and the way we got to find this property is a friend of ours who is a technologist who's doing really cool stuff around energy and coatings, material science stuff. Very cool, very futuristic, going to save the world, all the rest. He was looking, he had to get out of his space. His space is being sold, the one he's in now, and so he needs to have more space. And then he got it in his head that he has all these friends who are also in technology companies, and a bunch of them are looking for space. And he thought, well, if all of us look together, maybe we could do kind of an interesting thing where it won't really be a tech accelerator, but it'll be a place where people of like minds are working together, and they're working on complementary technologies, and that's bound to create some really interesting opportunities. So they went out and they started looking at properties, and they found one that was sort of interesting. And he knows that I'm always game for a real estate investment, and so he asked me to come take a look at it. And I couldn't go, so Sam went. Sam took a look at it, really interesting, and then he had me go. And so I actually went the other day to look at this property, and it's such a disaster. So all the stuff that the real estate broker told us, we found out when we got the so-called financials of the property today, none of it was true. He said the taxes, real estate taxes, were one thing. They're at least 60% higher than what he said. He said that the two tenants that were left were on months to months, were paying a certain price. When we actually saw the numbers, nowhere even close. The property is losing close to $100,000 a year. And it's in terrible shape. Parts of it are in absolutely horrible shape. So we know going in, it's not just buying the property, right? So interest rates are low. That's kind of okay. It's figuring out what we have to do to make the property habitable, because in some places it's not habitable, and in other places it's sort of habitable. And the big part of it, like 10,000 square feet, 5 years ago, a home builder used to be there and had his showroom. And guess what? He hasn't been there in 5 years, so that's not usable space. So we're looking at all of these different things, and we finally got the numbers in, and we're going to go back and start to talk to all of these different people, all the different potential renters, about what their interest really is and trying to figure out how much they're willing to pay. And then we're going to have to do a big spreadsheet to figure out what it's going to cost to buy, what's going to cost to maintain, right? So if you think about a house, you're going to buy it, there's going to be a mortgage. Now you got to fix it up, so there's going to be some money needed for that. Every year, you're going to have to plow the snow away if you live in a cold weather climate like I do, and you're going to have to keep the lights running, and the air conditioning is going to break, and you're going to have to repair the roof, right? So there's maintenance issues that you have, and in a big property, there's more maintenance issues. In this one, we're going to have to actually go and redo the whole driveway parking area because it's got potholes. Like, I don't know if Martians have been landing in this thing. They're so huge. And then on the other side, we've got to look at the income. So who's going to rent? How much are they going to pay? Are the current people staying? Some of them don't pay on time. Do you want to keep them? And so you can see how all of the different moving parts have to come together on a really big spreadsheet. And then Sam and I will be able to make a smart decision about, is this a place we want to invest our cash? I thought you'd find it interesting to watch as I kind of talk out loud, we walk through this property, just as a way of sharing with you some of the things that we are doing. So if this is interesting to you, you can come back in next week, in a couple of weeks, and I'll give you an update as we move forward and try and figure this out. Now, today I've got a guest on the show to help me with a follow-up report on the Tila RESPA mortgage disclosure changes due to take effect, we imagine, on October 3rd of this year. I think it's going to be October 3rd. Tila RESPA is the Truth in Lending Act and Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act, and you may also hear this referred to as TRID, T-R-I-D. Bill Gilmartin is the Senior Policy Advisor for Industry Relations and Outreach for the National Association of Realtors. He's going to give me an update on a letter NAR sent, National Association of Realtors, sent to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, that's the CFPB, regarding some concerns NAR has about the implementation process for these new disclosure rules. So real estate industry professionals in particular are going to want to hear this. It's a great conversation. After I talked with Bill, I'll answer a question from someone who has been forced into a really tough spot, trying to convince two separate lenders, a mortgage lender and a second lender, this is a home equity loan as it turns out, to agree to a short sale on a property he owns. That is monumentally difficult because each lender is going to be forced to take a hit on their original investment, and getting them to agree on a way to share proceeds from a short sale, assuming they can even get that far down the path, is an almost Herculean task. Now, I've also got a Glinkonomics report to share on the latest news from CoreLogic on home prices and distressed sales and where we're going, where we're going to be in 2016. So why don't we get started with all of that, and then I'll come back for a little wrap-up. The CoreLogic HPI for May showed a yearly increase for the 39th consecutive month, this time of 6.3% from May of 2014. The May HPI also showed a monthly 1.7% increase from April. So the latest data shows that home prices are just about 8.5% below their April 2006 peak. Excluding distressed sales, that differential drops to 4.7%, hello, which also happens to be the annual increase predicted by CoreLogic for the May 2016 HPI, a year from now. If that holds up, then the non-distressed housing market will have recovered its pre-crisis value that month, a full decade after its last peak. However, distressed sales are still way above their pre-crisis levels, and that means all the home price data, excluding distressed sales, is pretty useless, aside from providing economists some interesting statistics to analyze. According to CoreLogic's April distressed sales report, 11%, or more than a tenth of all homes sold nationwide in April, were distressed, meaning that they were either real estate owned or short sales. Now, that's down 3% from April of 2014. But remember, prior to the housing market crash, the normal proportion of distressed sales as a percentage of the overall number of homes sold in a given month was generally around 2%. So we've come a long way since distressed sales peaked in January of 2009 at almost a third of all homes sold, right? So 11% doesn't sound so bad when you put it into that context. But CoreLogic predicts in its report that the share of distressed sales in the market won't drop back down to that normal 2% level until sometime in mid-2017. It's hard to feel like celebrating, right, about waiting another 2 years for the housing market to finish making a full recovery. But when you've considered that we've already waited 9 years to get to the point we're at now, it kind of feels to me like we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. I would just add as an aside that even though we're going to get to the same place we were a decade ago, we've had a decade's worth of inflation in the meantime. And some economists are saying that even once we hit that high, that where we were back in April of 2006, if you adjust for inflation, we're still 25% below what the peak or the high should really be. Again, numbers can say anything you want them to. I'm Elise Glink. If you want to learn more about investing in real estate, you should check out my Intentional Investor Series, How to Be Wildly Successful in Real Estate, at thinklinkstore.com. So, a couple of weeks ago, I did a video about the new changes afoot in the mortgage lending industry. Tila RESPA, or TRID, depending on how, whatever you prefer, is shaking up the way mortgage lenders will do business after October 3rd of this year. That's thanks to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which has issued these new disclosure guidelines as a part of its mandate under the Dodd-Frank Act. Now, the changes are intended to help protect the end consumer, right, any borrower who obtains a mortgage loan. But for the mortgage lending industry and, by association, the entire community of real estate professionals, the changes are creating a huge amount of anxiety. Lenders are scrambling to make the necessary adjustments before the paperwork requirements change. Realtors are unsure of where they should be. Real estate attorneys, not the ones who represent the lender, but the ones who are representing consumers, are all up in arms. And then you've got everybody else, closing agents and title agents, and everybody's got huge amounts of concern as to how this is actually going to practice. Today, I've asked Bill Gilmartin on the show. He's from the National Association of Realtors, and I'm hoping that we can talk about some of the things he's hearing from real estate professionals who are actually prepping for the TILA RESPA changes right now. He's a senior policy advisor at the National Association of Realtors. He's joining me today from their D.C. offices. Bill, welcome to Big Money Real Estate.
Well, thank you very much, Elise. Good to be with you.
It's good to have you on the show. So a couple of weeks ago, we did this Twitter chat with the National Association of Realtors. I don't think you were on that. But we also were with Wells Fargo, one of the biggest mortgage lenders in the country, and they've been working feverishly to try and get their lenders, the technology and everything, up to speed, and they've been working on it over the last 18 months or so. You've just written another letter to the CFPB asking for, is it an additional grace period of 3 months beyond October 3rd?
Yes, Elise, as a part of our official comment letter in response to CFPB's proposal to extend the implementation date for TRID to October 3rd, we also went on and explained that we continue to believe that there should be an official grace period, if you will, or relaxed enforcement to extend at least through the end of this year. Many of our industry partners have chimed in with similar proposals, similar requests of CFPB, and others have actually asked that the official grace period extend through the end of March of next year. But, you know, we think we're heartened by the fact that unprompted almost, the Bureau several weeks ago did indicate that in the early going of TRID implementation, they would be, quote, sensitive to good faith efforts to implement the regulations appropriately. And as I said, we're heartened by that, but we'd like a little more specificity in terms of what that means and in terms of what time period that they're considering.
So the TILA RESPA changes come from the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act. That's the RESPA part of this. TILA is Truth in Lending Act. So what they're trying to do is actually, and these are the first major changes in, I think, 30 years, right, Bill?
Yes, that's correct. And you very correctly point out that it's TILA and RESPA. And over the years, those two important consumer protections, Truth in Lending Act and the Real Estate Settlements Procedure Act, were administered by different departments in the federal government. TILA was under the Federal Reserve, and RESPA was under the Department of Housing and Urban Development. And right there was the prescription for confusion and overlapping requirements and generally not the most educating feature for consumers. And over the years, there was many calls for the Fed and HUD to get together and combine those regulations. But it wasn't until the Dodd-Frank Act was passed that the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau was given that specific mission, and that's what they've done with the TILA RESPA Integrated Disclosure Rule.
All right, so, which is, of course, how we, where the TRID part of it comes from.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about how the realtors play in, and by realtors, of course, we mean any real estate agent or broker, whether or not they're a member of the National Association of Realtors. They are also required to do some things under these new rules. So lenders have all bunches of new disclosures. They're supposed to mail or email, but most of them are probably going to mail it, to consumers the new disclosures on the costs and the money and where it's all going in and out of a week in advance. They're going to be sending this by mail 7 days in advance. assume that you get it, or they have to email it out 3 days in advance, and then they have to know that you've actually opened it and looked at it. So there's all kinds of technology that's going in there. Where do the realtors come into play, and what are some of the concerns that they and you have?
Well, you're right. Time periods for offering the initial loan estimate and then the final closing document can be confusing, and all the way to the fact that you count Saturdays differently for both documents.
Well, of course, it's just your half day, right?
That's right. But so that's immediately of a concern to realtors in their role of advising clients and home buyers and sellers for that matter. They'd like to see a process run smoothly. And so the concerns are at different points. The first one being, what will these rules mean for pre-approvals? And because, as you know, the loan estimate must be offered within 3 days of a loan application being filed. And what triggers an official loan application? There are six elements of information from the consumer: name, income, Social Security number, the property address that they are hoping to buy, the estimated value of that, and the amount of the mortgage they're seeking. And once a lender has those six pieces of information, they have an application, and they must provide a loan estimate within 3 days. So what does that do to pre-approvals? Very fortunately, CFPB has come out with some unofficial guidance anyways that indicates that as long as you don't have all six pieces of information, you can go ahead and seek, the lender can go ahead and seek verifying documentation as far as income, and that can lead to a pre-approval. And so the obvious thing to leave out of the litany of six pieces of information is the property address, the subject property that you're hoping to buy. And that may be a workaround, but it's not 100% comfortable for professionals, but that's what we have at the moment in terms of pre-approvals.
So it strikes me, if I could just jump in, it strikes me that one of the things that realtors are most concerned about is the very big possibility that loans simply are not going to close and house deals are not going to close. And you could imagine very easily that a closing set for the morning, let's say it's a sale and a buy, the sale doesn't happen. So now the sellers who were hoping to sell don't have money to buy. So their buy gets canceled. The buyers, the ones that they're buying from, those sellers now can't close on their buy. Those sellers can't close on their buy. And so on and so on. And you could easily see in a single day, 200 deals would fall apart. Is that kind of one of the big concerns? And then if you start another grace period of 3 days or 7 days, if they mail everything all over again, and yet moving companies have already come in, cleaned out the house, people have to find a place to live. Is this sort of the real estate Ageddon that you guys are imagining could happen?
Well, yes, indeed, Elise, and thank you for raising that. I was saving kind of the worst for last, if you will.
Oh, I always go first in.
Okay. But sure, delay in closings is a major concern for real estate professionals and members of NAR. But again, we've been working along with trade groups to try to get after the CFPB for official guidance in this arena. And I'm happy to say that they have, in fact, indicated those areas where there are three areas, according to the director of CFPB, Richard Cordray, only three areas that the rules would demand a new 3-day waiting period. And that is when there's a rate increase of 0.125% for fixed rate mortgages and 0.25% or more for adjustable rate mortgages, or when you change the loan product at the last minute, or if a prepayment penalty is added. According to CFPB, only those three circumstances would require a 3-day period. Now, that's good news, but as you suggest, what happens with the walkthrough on closing day or other typical matters that come up that affect closings? In an ideal world, those matters would be handled just as they are now. But and there's a big but, and we continue to be concerned how lenders may react, especially when they have investors in a loan. Are they going to pull back and go back to their investors to seek further approval? Will these typical closing day issues lead to new three-day extensions? We'll have to wait and see how this gets implemented in the field.
Well,
I think lenders are not inclined to want to do that
right.
any more than realtors are, but it's something we're going to have to see how it plays out. It also would be good, as we said in our comment letter, for CFPB to offer just as much possible written guidance as they can to address these kinds of issues.
So I think you've raised some points that I know real estate attorneys are very concerned about, which is when you actually get to the table, so much last-minute negotiating goes on, right? You've got people who are assuming that, the last walkthrough, there's a whole bunch of damage caused by the moving trucks, right? So now they want money up front for that. Or you've got, we're going to give you a carpet allowance. We're going to give you this whole package as part of the closing. Very concerned that the lenders at the last minute, because they're worried about the CFPB coming in and saying, no, that's a totally different loan, that they may have to send that back to underwriting. Or, as you say, one of the things that would send it back is if you've got a document that has just the wrong amount on the loan. So, and I've had that done myself. I went into a loan one day. We were refinancing. It was a quarter of a point wrong. They instead of redoing the loan, they decided to give us a $200 credit or $250 credit, and we went forward. But that loan was wrong, and it was more than the eighth of a percent. So there are some real concerns of things that happen at the very last minute. Even you can only be so planned out when it comes to a house closing. What, is there anything else that the realtors are concerned about in terms of process? I know that some consumer activists are saying, well, if you're sending all these documents out ahead of time, it's possible that the realtor who's going to be part of this chain will see my information, my personal financial information, and I don't want that. Are you concerned about realtors inadvertently getting access to private financial data that they really shouldn't be a party to?
Well, I think realtors, for the most part, are accustomed to seeing the HUD-1, which is an important tool, but under current rules is usually delivered just a day or so before closing, even the day of closing. But it's an important tool to help advise their clients. Realtors have a trained eye and can look at these documents and maybe raise an issue that the consumer might not see. Actually, the concern is that under the new rules, lenders will not be offering a copy of the closing disclosure to realtors. And that realtors may have to simply ask the consumer if they can have a copy in order to help advise them, as they move toward closing. So it's kind of a two-edged sword, if you will. The new closing disclosure really doesn't have any financial information on it that the HUD-1 doesn't. And so we're talking with our industry trade partners in the mortgage banking arena and with CFPB about how that issue can be handled.
Are you concerned at all about the realtor's part in this? Like, where do you see points of pain for realtors as opposed to? I can see where the lenders have a point of pain, title closing officers and attorneys, but where for the realtors do you see the point of pain?
Well, I think the main point of pain will be in delayed closings and in trying to help consumers through what for all of us is often a difficult and sometimes overwhelming process. And so realtors want to help their clients and want to see home purchases and transactions handled as smoothly as possible. And so anytime there's a change like this, and this is a monumental change, there will be concerns about it. I happen to think that NAR and our industry trade partners are doing an excellent job in educating practitioners in the field, and NAR has been hard at work at it for over the past year, conducting a series of webinars. We've populated an entire web page and developed a field guide for realtors to navigate the new paths of TRID. There are a series of articles on our webpage. We've hosted events at our mid-year convention, some of the most well-attended events in recent time, when our president, national president Chris Polychron, and CFPB director Richard Cordray addressed audiences to educate them about the upcoming changes. And we're going to continue to do that as we move forward and into the implementation phase.
All right. Well, Bill, thank you so much for being with us today. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Elise, and thanks for your reporting on this, and thanks for your help.
Oh, no problem. One thing I want to see are people buy houses, sell houses, and have it all go smoothly. Bill Gilmartin is the Senior Policy Advisor for Industry Relations and Outreach for the National Association of Realtors. Selling your house as a short sale with two lenders could be an absolute nightmare. And unfortunately, that's the situation that today's person who sent me a question is facing. I'm Elise Glink. Here's today's Daily Update. So this is the question I got. If someone has a mortgage with one bank and a home equity line of credit with another, how exactly do the negotiations work if you find yourself facing a short sale? Since I have a mortgage and a home equity loan with different lenders, I want to have a better understanding of the process before I pick up the phone and tell them that I need to execute a short sale. And what happens if one of them agrees to the short sale and the other one doesn't? I thought we were done with all of these questions, but the truth is there are a whole lot of people who are still in a short sale situation. They're kind of congregated around different municipalities, but they're out there and they've got tough times ahead. And I wish I had better news, because when you've got two lenders, and believe me, some people have as many as 10 lenders, you're probably in for a real headache. Here's what to think about. First, your situation is going to be complicated no matter what you do, especially if the two lenders disagree about the true value of your property and what needs to be done to dispose of it. Further complications are going to arise if the second lender wants more money than it may get if the property is foreclosed on by the primary lender. Each bank is going to require that you get its approval for the short sale, so that's a whole separate process. This application process, you have to apply for a short sale, can be more tedious than the original loan application you went through when you originally got the loans. Many of the big box lenders have an automated system for approving short sales, and it can function through an online portal where documents are uploaded and the application is submitted. Now, there's a 30-day window where the lender is supposed to respond to you. They're legally required to respond in 30 days, but I will tell you from my mail, that doesn't always happen. Once you get the process going, each lender will have its own agenda, and if their agenda is different, you may not get the short sale approved by either or both lenders. So, for example, your first lender may approve the sale, but only if they get all the money from the sale. The equity lender, which is your second lender, may then refuse to approve the sale unless they too get some of the money, right? What's the incentive for them? If you can't get the second lender to agree, it will be impossible to get the sale finalized. Now, while the government has actually stepped up efforts to encourage equity or second lenders in some situations to release their debt, these lenders may still try to get more money, and others may not participate in the government programs, and other government programs have already expired. Given the many variables, the short sale process with multiple lenders is, hands down, one of the hardest transactions to complete. And I do not think you can do it alone. I recommend you find a really good real estate attorney or real estate agent with expertise in short sales to work with who has ample experience. It would be even better if these people had previously closed successfully short sale transactions with your primary and equity lenders. And that's because there are usually one or two point people in a whole metropolitan area who handle the short sales for a particular lender. So if you've gotten to know them through that process with a different client, right, if your agent has or your real estate attorney has, it's going to go a whole lot better for you. Now, while it's generally better to sell your home through a short sale, if you can't go that route and have not been making your payments to the lenders, the primary lender can proceed to foreclose on your house. But before giving it up, you want to see if you can find a buyer and get your current lenders to work with you to get the home sold. Now, here's a final thought. Throughout the housing crisis, many attorneys have made claims promising home sellers that they could get lenders to work faster through the short sale process and ultimately get you more money. Yeah. In some cases, these attorneys and short sale lender helpers, notice we said lender helpers, asked for an amount of cash up front, like $3,000, but then were not able to produce any results. So here's what you have to be aware of. If someone tries to give you that pitch, you've just got to move on and find a different attorney. Don't waste any time. You can ask them, do you charge upfront fees? And if they say yes, you say how much? And if they say $3,500, you're like, nah, I don't think so. You can get a really good referral to a real estate agent, a real estate attorney who's the right attorney from your local or state bar association. Or you can go through your real estate agent to see if they are working with somebody on a regular basis. Whatever you do, don't prepay for this. If you take nothing else away from this video, remember that. I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Elise Gling Show. I especially want to thank my guest, Bill Gilmartin from the National Association of Realtors, again for being on the show and taking so much time with us. If there is anything you missed, don't worry. Woo! You can find the show notes to this episode at thinklink.com. thinklink.com. If you're new to the show, be sure to subscribe. And if you're a regular listener and haven't already done so, please consider giving the show a ratings and or a review on iTunes. You can do this by searching for The Elise Gling Show in the podcast section of iTunes. And this will help our show get discovered by all kinds of new people. And while you're there, if you're searching on iTunes, be sure to look up Monday Morning Marketing with Elise Gling and John Byrne. This is our 45 minutes a week that we bring you all of our insights and information on search engine optimization, mobile marketing, what you need to do about PR, how to deal with marketing in the new digital era. John is my really close friend. We talk a lot about our kids. We talk a lot about our businesses. He's the former CMO of a global law firm and now runs his own content marketing company just like I do. So hopefully Monday Morning Marketing with Elise Gling and John Byrne will bring a smile to your face, if not help you run your business better. This brings us to the end of another episode of The Elise Gling Show. I'm still your host, Elise Gling. I'll be back next week with another episode. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week.